Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. I'm Cheng Peng, editor-in-chief of San Jose Hockey Now. You can also find my work at MEC Sharks and on Twitter at Cheng_Peng.
And I'm Keegan McNally. You can find me on Twitter at halfwall_hockey, at my website half-wallhockey.com, or at San Jose Hockey Now. It's officially trade deadline week, everybody. Get excited.
Yay.
Woo! big money, no whammies. Cheng, what do we got this week?
We have an exciting show today. We're going to give our trade deadline predictions.
Yep. We're going to talk through the most likely or possible candidates for the Sharks to be traded this week. The trade deadline's on Friday. We're recording this on a Monday. And then we're going to have a post-trade deadline show out sometime this weekend as well. But before we get to our trade deadline predictions, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the recent games that the Sharks have played, not too in-depth, but just a little bit.
And lost.
The headline is, again, Sharks are bad. We're going to talk an interesting decision by Quinn to take a timeout in a 7-1 losing game.
Mm-hmm. 12 minutes to go in a game.
Yeah, 12 minutes to go in a 7-1 losing
Lindy's
game.
Last stand.
Good point. Lindy Ruff recently was relieved of his duties.
His last victory as a New Jersey Devils coach, yeah.
Yeah, so that's one you can walk out on, is beating the Sharks. Cheng, you're going to talk some of the retrospective on the Kakkonen-Middleton trade.
Yeah, I was thinking about it with the Minnesota game, right? So
yeah, trade the line coming up, Minnesota game. Makes sense. And then, like we said, the trade deadline predictions to kind of round out the show. But I'm wearing a jersey this week because the Sharks recalled Magnus Crona, and he played really well, and I was really excited about him. So that's the only reason. Also, maybe some good luck, I guess, but I'm happy for Magnus. That's why I'm wearing a jersey. He deserves it. All right, let's start with the game, Shang. What did we see? Bad.
yeah, a lot of it is bad, but a couple of good things touch on quickly. Anthony Duclair, Philip Zadina, both scoring. That's a good thing. Both promising, be it for Sharks' return at the trade deadline, or Zadina is creeping into the conversation. Maybe you do bring him back. And so that's nice. He's at the right age, and that he can still grow with the Sharks if he has kind of taken another level to his game. And so we have another 20 games or so to figure out if it's just a hot streak or so. Mm-hmm. But for me, the first thing I wanted to touch upon, that I actually did get to ask David Quinn about, and I didn't put out a story on it. And so if you guys are interested, why did David Quinn call a timeout with 12 minutes ago in a 7-1 loss, 7-1 deficit to New Jersey Devils? And mm-hmm. I know that when he called a timeout, that was very, very easy fodder for the comedians. Here comes the comeback.
Yeah. We've got him right where we want him, a 6-goal deficit.
Exactly. Yeah. Time to get going, guys. Mm-hmm. And we asked after the game a lot about the what. What was the message that Quinn delivered during that timeout? And Quinn and the Sharks didn't really want to talk about it. They wanted to keep that in-house. But I thought equally interesting, though, was the why. And I wrote an article about it. The article is titled, actually, Same Old BS, Same Old Bullshit, which is what Quinn said.
Yeah,
after that New Jersey game. He wasn't really talking about the result, though. He was talking about sort of the process, the plays that led to the goals, the turnovers, that sort of thing, right? That's really what he meant. I think everybody knows, David Quinn included, that the Sharks are going to lose a lot of games, but there is a difference, and I wrote in an article, there's a difference between losing 7-2 and 4-2. There is, whether or not that doesn't mean anything for the Macklin Celebrini sweepstakes. But in terms of, Quinn likes to say, when you go to the car at night, you feel a lot better. In the article, I talk about that it feels better for the fan base if you have a team that's trying hard, that's competing, that's close in games, whether you win or lose. I know that the Sharks have lost a lot of fans at SAP Centerbreeze. They're losing straight out. It doesn't matter whether they're losing big or losing close, that about a third of the Sharks fan base is deciding not to go to games anymore because it's just not an interesting team. But the fans who are remaining, who are there, they deserve a competitive product, I think. A team that at least is giving its all for 60 minutes, even if they're losing games still. And so that's part of the point that I make. But also, too, the main point of the article is that Quinn has to call a timeout. Quinn can't
for
let
sure.
the – it's not just that game, but really the rest of the season just kind of slip away and let bad habits creep in, because bad habits affect your William Eklunds, I think, your Fabian Zetterlunds, kind of your building blocks of the future. And so Quinn basically kind of said about the same thing when I asked him, why did you call that timeout? I asked him the next day. And Quinn said, and I quote, "It just wasn't acceptable what was happening. We still had 12 minutes of hockey to play. I mean, you're always getting evaluated. It's easy to be on your game when things are going well, but what are you going to do when there's a little bit of adversity? We were feeling sorry for ourselves, and it just wasn't acceptable. You got to finish your job. I don't care what the score is. You got to finish the game. I wasn't going to let it slide." And so I thought that is the correct answer. I mean, yeah, the Sharks aren't going to make a run. The Sharks can win. They have, 22 games left? They can win every single game, and they're still going to be they're not even going to – if they win every single game, they're going to have 80 points. They're still going to be a good 15 points on the playoffs if they go on a 22-game winning streak. So that part doesn't matter anymore. There's literally no hope. I don't even know what the magic number is, but the Sharks might have passed it a month ago for all we know.
Yeah, it's very possible.
But anyway, though, you still got to, for the standards that we talk about, be for the young players, be for the fans who are still paying, that have remained loyal and who are still attending games, that you've got to put out the best product that you can. Everyone understands that it's all about the number one pick. It's all about building through the draft. The team is rebuilding. I think most fans understand that. And I think everyone who listens to this podcast understands that. But once again, though, there is a difference in losing 4-2 and 7-2. And anyway, one more thing that I asked Quinn that I think you guys might be interested in his answer. And I don't know if it's the answer that you guys will want to hear, but I asked Quinn, well, obviously we hear a lot from David criticizing his own players for this or that, right? Same old bullshit, that kind of stuff, right? But what does he think that the coaching staff could do to improve? And I don't ask the players this, because for the players, it's kind of a shaky thing to answer in public, because you don't want to be seen as a player that is openly criticizing coaching staff, even if the criticism is constructive, even if you intend it as constructive criticism. You know, that's something to do privately. And that's why a lot of times these kind of stories about, like, talking about what the coaching staff can do better are often done in private. Just like what we talked about last week, what players told Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger, what my private conversations with players, what they yielded about the same questions and same concerns. And so anyway, so that's why I don't bother asking players this, but I was curious what Quinn would say. And Quinn said, "I think we got to continue as we go through this. There's different challenges. We got to make sure that we're adapting as we go along. Can't be the same approach all the time." And I think you do kind of see that in a sense of, Quinn talks less about winning games now. And he does talk more literally about, look, it's a lot of it is we may not win the games. This is kind of paraphrased. He's not saying exactly these words, but he's saying basically, like I mentioned, that there is a difference between losing 4-2 to 7 as opposed to 7-2. You have to stay competitive. And another part of the adjustment is that the trade deadline is here. And so that day after the New Jersey game, they had a chat, the coaching staff and the players, kind of a typical practice sort of meeting, right? And they talked about just the reality of the trade deadline, and let's not let it affect our play that negatively that you're embarrassing yourself on the ice in front of your paying audience. And I think that's an adjustment. In addition to that quote, Quinn said, we got to be cognizant of that approach. Our different goals every day. Sometimes it's video, sometimes it's no video, sometimes it's approaching the mental side of it. And you have to keep a close temperature of the room. And so you got to stay on the top of the room. And, you know, again, back to those things, like what is the room worried about, right? Is it the trade deadline? Is it going into what you're going to talk about with Magnus Crona? Like that's a rallying point. Can we get the team to rally around that and having kind of adjusting to different things? Because to get through the rest of the season, right, there is no overarching goal of we got to make the playoffs. We're going to win the Stanley Cup. There's not that one goal, I think, for everybody to rally around, right? And so you got to find different goals to keep guys motivated throughout this from now until the end of the season. I guess the one overarching goal now is everybody wants to have a job in the NHL next year.
And that's not always guaranteed, for sure.
It's not, especially with this team, right? And especially as our talk about trade deadline predictions will suggest too that a few Sharks are in danger of not having NHL contracts next year for sure. There's no doubt about it. And so anyway, so Quinn mentions we didn't like the result against Nashville, but we felt a lot better getting into our cars after that game than we did against the Devils.
Sure.
And I think that again that goes back to Quinn still got to coach this team with 22 games to go. And while I understand that when I ask the question, what can you do better, David Quinn, that people probably want something more specific, more like, oh, yeah, you know, I should have been playing Kevin LeBanc all year. You know, what an idiot I am or something like that. Right. That I still think that was an interesting answer that he gave overall on both fronts of why he called the timeout and also too, what he can do better. And so I wanted to share that since during this week, trade deadline week, I don't think I'm going to get to writing these articles.
It's going to get busy. And I think back to your point that there's no overarching goal of you're going to make the playoffs, you're going to compete for a Stanley Cup. The timeout to me seemed appropriate. Like I remember watching the game being like, they needed this. Like they were getting run out and they just, again, looking sorry for themselves. Mm-hmm. Those timeouts aren't for that game, obviously. This timeout's for the future. They're like building blocks to be like, all right, pause, you know, like you need some coaching at this moment. We're doing horrible. And here, you know, like it's just a pause. It's a building block for future games. So I honestly, if anybody shit on it, I think it's just not, you know, that warranted. I feel like it was a smart coaching decision. And again, Quinn is doing the best he can with the hand he's dealt right now. And it's not a great hand, especially with Couture and Hurdle being out. So there's like a glimmer of hope there. We had a few games of those guys and they were like, oh, maybe this is a decent team. And now it's just wheels have fallen off again. And here we are.
But. Yeah. Moreover, on top of it, I wanted to add that one more thing he said that day after the Jersey game was last night we got away from it. Is that a one-off? Are we starting to cave to our situation and the circumstances? And I think once again, and they've done a decent job of this considering the actual talent level of the team that they've had. And I wrote that in the article about the New Jersey game. They've had these rock bottom games, right? Obviously, the Pittsburgh Vancouver 10 goal games, the Toronto loss, right? Where I think they lost seven something or a five. Maybe it was just I don't even remember the score anymore. But they were a run out of the building in Toronto, right? And that was at the tail end of a 12 game losing streak too. Where really the entire plot of the season just could have been lost. It felt like I think the New Jersey game was another one where just it could have been 20 more games of getting beat like by 3 or 4 goals a night. It felt like that was on the horizon for the Sharks. And I think they picked themselves up actually reasonably well since that game, be it the Anaheim game, which I think they should have won, except the goaltending for once this season. Let them down quite a bit in that game, I think. Even the Dallas game, they were right in it. I know people look at the shot counter, but they actually were decent against Dallas. If you want to focus on even strength play, Sportlogic actually had the Sharks with more quality chances at even strength than the Dallas Stars in that game. And Dallas was all about the power play. They really ran the Sharks out of the building on the power play. And then the Minnesota game, the Minnesota game wasn't as good, but they did manage to keep it close. So the scoreboard was okay. Kakhnin, I think, rebounded and had a pretty good game that game. But anyway, so I think they've come back and they've shown again. I mentioned the Crona kind of playing for Crona in a Dallas game that they're still playing together as a team. And I think that again, what can David Quinn do at this point with his roster? I think that if he's able to do that from now to the end of the season, I'm not saying that that guarantees that he should come back next year, but that's at least an argument though for in his favor.
Yeah. The Dallas game specifically was just wildly entertaining. I really enjoyed watching it, and they did seem a way more composed than they did in the prior game or the New Jersey game. And Corona, I think they did. I think they rallied around Corona. He needed to have a quality start and not get immediately shelled. And he succeeded. He looked pretty good. And I think it's an interesting time in the Sharks goaltending pool because Blackwood's injured right now. And he seems to be like he's going to be here for next year, Blackwood. But Kakinen, we don't know. Mäkiniemi's been hurt on and off. Romanoff.
Oh, he has Mäkiniemi has mono, by the way.
Oh, interesting.
Because I was told a month ago and I put it out that he was ill and then he didn't come back. It's been like a month. So what do you have for a month that makes you that ill? And actually mono is
did they confirm it was mono?
Fairly typical of that. So I've looked around on it. It's mono, yeah. So,
I mean, he just hasn't.
It's not his
stay.
Hip. So that's a good thing.
It's not his hip. Yeah, he hasn't been. Yeah. And then Corona, who was acquired I think it was a trade deadline trade as well.
It was
Tampa Bay a few years ago. So
Frederick
Claesson. Yeah,
Claesson. That was a good trade for Doug. Got to give Doug credit on that one.
Yeah, that was good. And I honestly don't even remember if Claesson played a game for.
I think he did, but he was like, a spare defenseman though. He was
like 7-3.
We're making a
run.
We want some depth. So
yeah. Oh, he did play. He played two games in 2021 and the Lightning couldn't care less because they won the Stanley Cup. So
yeah. Did he play in the playoffs too?
No, he didn't.
But he got his name on the cup, I'm sure. So good for you, Frederick.
I mean, maybe he played four games with the Sharks, two games with the Lightning in 2020, 2021. And that was it for the season. Maybe. Because there's like rules about how many games you got to play during the regular season, right? Or
oh yeah,
who knows?
Or in the playoffs? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, yeah. I hope he got
either way.
He got to lift it. He got to lift it. All right, which is still
really
for playing.
I was just
playing like zero playoff games. So
and that's one of those sneaky trades. You know, who would have thought that Magnus Krohn is starting an NHL game? And
you just take a flyer on a young player. If he doesn't work out, well, everyone knew he was going to work out. And if he does kind of work out. And not that Corona has made it or worked out, but Corona has developed, and Corona at least is still a prospect with at least a sliver of a chance, better than a sliver of a chance of making some NHL impact. So that's a win of a trade on any
100%. Yeah, 100%. That's the kind of deals that I'm hoping for, along with, you know, we'll talk about other deadline predictions, but stuff like that, just some kind of off the wall thinking. To try and sneak something past that's going to be beneficial for the future. So that's the shout out for Corona for this week.
Are we going to look back at the 2021 trade deadline as Doug's last great stand, placed in for Corona, Barabanov for Suomela?
Oh, man. Those were pretty good hitters, man.
Yeah, right? In terms of value, I mean, he killed it in value on both those trades. So not only is whatever Greer gets for Barabanov, if anything at all, at the deadline, you're going to add that on top of getting almost 100 points out of Barabanov. And, of course, what does Suomela give? Barabanov might have outscored Suomela. In the AHL, you know, Suomela was with the Marlies, and Barabanov might have scored him at AHL level. So.
Yeah, so yeah, 26 points in 48 games for Suomela in the AHL. And then deadline, he had after he was traded, he had 7 games and 2 points. So yeah, Barabanov definitely outscored him in the NHL.
Just I wish we could have a graphic now, Doug Wilson face with the shades coming over his face now.
He always was a good trader, I will say. You know, like
Doug Wilson masterclass.
He made some sneaky, awesome trades. I mean, sneaky, just some amazing trades in his.
He did. I remember some of my best articles. We're going to talk about sort of what scouts are saying about the Sharks trade deadline targets and what they might bring up. But my favorite articles were scouts bitching about what Doug Wilson, his sort of his negotiating tactics that Doug always wanted the world, and he's offering you this, he's trying to offer you this junk. and most, of course, most times you wouldn't take it, but sometimes if you're a camp and you're like, whatever, we just want a decent 7-8 for our playoff run, sure, you can have, we have no use for Crona anyway, we probably weren't going to sign him or whatever, or he's an NCAA guy, but we don't see much of a future for him, take him.
He's, man, I do miss that, but he was never a good contract negotiator, but man, that guy could make a trade.
Yeah, that's certainly like I don't know. Yeah, it's one of those things where if you looked at the first 15 years of Doug Wilson's GMing and he stopped right there, people will be talking about him as like the one of the maybe the best underrated GM. He didn't win a Stanley Cup, so people always will always note that, but that he's sort of like the best underrated GM in the league ever. Because if you look at that run from 2003 to 19, There are mistakes in there, right? Adam Burris, there's definitely mistakes in there, but by and large, though, you can't argue with too much. You can argue with some of the small details, but the contracts back then still looked fine. So
let's visit the Minnesota game, the last game that the Sharks played. It's interesting because it's been a little while since we thought about it, but the Kakinen Middleton trade, what did you want to talk about with that?
Well, let's
rehash
move
it
forward to a new trade deadline, the 2022 trade deadline, right?
Yeah.
And at that point, Doug is on medical leave. This is Joel Will's trade deadline. So that's what I understand from talking to people over the last couple of years. So Kakinen for Middleton is a Joel Will trade, like it or not. And I think it just stands out to me that, and I said this back then too, that it seemed like a very curious trade, because why would you ever trade a top four defenseman, which Middleton was that year, for kind of a 1B, a goalie that hadn't established himself as a star.
Sure.
And that confused me at the time. And also, let's not forget too, the Sharks had Aiden Hill and James Reimer at that time too. And so they had goalies, and they had a young goalie in Aiden Hill that day. Doug Wilson had traded a second round pick for the year before. So at some point, the Sharks organization in the recent past had liked Aiden Hill, even though Aiden Hill had a lot of injury trouble that year.
Yeah.
So what made sense to me, the only way I could make sense of that deal was that from Doug Wilson to Joel Will, that they figured out that first that maybe Aiden Hill wasn't it. Okay. And another part of it is that the Sharks pro scouting staff, they didn't think that Middleton was a true top four defender, which also makes sense because, again, let's not forget that, you know, we're no revisionist history here, that Jacob Middleton, he was the Mr. Irrelevant pick by the Kings, I think in 2015, quite a while ago, maybe even before that, right?
Yeah,
the Sharks had him in the organization for a long time, but he was consistently just with the Barracuda. I think for 3-4 years running, he was just with the Barracuda. Nobody thought that he was going to develop into a everyday NHL player. I didn't think so. I covered Jake for a couple of years while he was with the Barracuda. I didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going into the 21-22 season and roster cuts were coming, et cetera, et cetera. And I always had Jake Middleton in camp. I always had Middleton being cut or sent down to the Barracuda at some point. And so at that point, at the beginning of that season, he was, at least in terms of his NHL prospects, he was a number 7, number 8 guy, maybe minor league staple guy, great in the room kind of guy, right? And anyway, kind of came out of nowhere the 2021-22 season. He partnered with Erik Karlsson, which was another reason why it was suspicious too, because Erik did have a way, obviously, with his puck moving ability, Erik's puck moving ability and skating, of really elevating the play of guys that were more defensive. Basically, Erik did what what those guys couldn't do so well. And those guys did some things that Eric couldn't do so well in terms of the defending and being physical. And so Eric had obviously elevated guys like Nikolai Knyazhov, and granted, in Knyazhov's defense, he's had a lot of knee injuries. Elevated later the next year, elevated Jacob Medna,
who the Sharks were able
to turn to a fourth round pick, and then he got waived by Seattle. So that's definitely, he got raised by Erik Karlsson there. And so there was some suspicion, reasonable, that Middleton was just a guy that was propped up by Karlsson to some degree. So again, when the Sharks traded Middleton, these were reasonable things to think. But as we've seen, though, with the Wild, I think that the Sharks were wrong. And Middleton's usage on a much better Wild team, he's been a top four guy the last two seasons. And so anyway, going back to the captain part of it, captain obviously had a rough year last year, but he's been pretty good this year. I think Kakinen's been fine. I mean, this is not an attack on Kakinen. He's been perfectly fine. But as a pure player, no regard to contract or age. And actually, though, contract and age are not bad for Middleton, but I'll get to that in a second. But there are scouts that would take Middleton over Mero Faro right now. And there are also scouts, obviously, that will take Middleton over Kakinen. I think that'll be even more unanimous. And so Middleton obviously has more trade value than a Kakinen. I think with Faro, it's debatable. And also, too, now let's talk about the contract, right? Middleton's contract. Because Middleton was a late bloomer, the Wild were able to sign him that offseason after they traded for him to a 3-year deal, $2.45 million AAV, which is below Ferraro's, kind of below market value. Good contract for a guy that's playing kind of fringe top 4 minutes. And I was just thinking about that in the Minnesota game. I know it's kind of a side. I'm not really talking about the Minnesota game at all, but the Minnesota game being the first game that Kakinen has played against the Wild since that trade, and Middleton is still an important part of that Wild team. That was a misstep. That was, I think, in some way, one of the worst trades in recent Sharks history, because you traded a found gem, a found prize that you developed too. You turned them from a player that the Kings didn't want to sign, and you put them in your system. This also goes back to another old thing that Sharks fans have been bitching about for the last 5 years, like Roy Sommer, no development, Sharks development, blah, 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 right? And I told you back then, like, it's kind of weird to blame development for a lack of talent, right? And a development staff, or maybe not so much talent. And I think Middleton is a good example of, look, development staff did do something there. They turned a guy that the Kings didn't want, that looked like a future, at best, number 7, number 8 defenseman. They helped turn him into on a good team, a fringe top 4 defenseman. Sure. And so that's a great example. That's sort of like the last, I guess then I would say in some ways, that's sort of like the last great development guy to come out of Roy Sommer's Barracuda teams and that development staff and those assistant coaches. I think before that, maybe their last great success was like a Barkley Gaudreau, which is a little more in the past. So I can see why there's a kind of a gap there where fans are complaining about what Roy is doing down there and whatnot. But I think you got to give Middleton that credit to that staff. And so anyway, I just think overall, like, just the overall idea again of trading a guy who ended up being a true top 4 defenseman for a 1B goalie is a bad trade no matter how you cut it. And even if Middleton wasn't with the Sharks still, because at the time of the trade, of course, like I said, Middleton wasn't proven yet. But Middleton has proven himself for the next year or two. So imagine what you can get for Jacob Middleton at the deadline this year. Yeah, I would think maybe a second at least, right? Better than a Kakinen. And so anyway, that's sort of a aside. I was thinking about it. I wrote 200 words about it in my game notes article, and I thought, oh, there's no reason to put that there. So
anyway. I'd never disparage Jacob Middleton because I think he's I love Jacob Middleton. I got my girlfriend into hockey probably a couple years ago, 2 years ago, and probably 2021 actually. And her first like player that she loved to watch was Jacob Middleton, mostly because she just thought he was cute.
Fan favorite. He also was great in the room, beloved in the room. And so this guy had everything that you want to keep in your organization.
So she has never forgiven Joe Will for trading him.
This is fair.
Yeah. We are forgetting that we did get a fifth round pick that turned into Jake Furlong. So we got a Jake for a Jake from that trade as well.
Okay. I actually didn't know. No, it was I forgot it was for Furlong. Okay.
So, yeah. But, you know, it still was only a fifth. I think it was 140th overall. So it was like kind of here's an extra pick. But, I understand, I think, some of the logic, but it did seem odd at the time.
I don't know, because you had Hill, you had Reimer.
What
was the logic?
I think it was more just trying
to... Reimer was having a good season. Hill was hurt, so I can... Yeah. But it's not like the Sharks were trying to make a playoff run at that point of the season. They were pretty much out of it. And so
I meant selling high or selling at what they thought was a high for Jake Middleton.
Well, that's what I mean. Said. Yeah, that at the time of the... That's what I thought was reasonable. Mm-hmm. But whatever they evaluated was
wrong.
Has proven to be incorrect.
Exactly. Middleton's developed further than we probably even the Sharks thought he would, and now he's like a very rock solid top 4D playing 20 minutes a night for a decent NHL team.
For a playoff team last year too, for a better team last year.
So now in retrospect, it's definitely not a close call. You'd take Middleton over Kähkönen. Oh well, I am happy that he's on a decent-ish team. They're not great this year, but decent and playing big minutes. Because I do wonder, if later on, does Carlson get traded if Middleton's still there and Sharks have a little bit better of a season?
Probably,
but I wonder how well Middleton would do on this Sharks team right now. I do wonder if there's not enough of an offensive, partner for him to really play that great. So,
or maybe he just does. He's like a better version of Jan Rudo. He's playing 20 minutes a night, and it's like, he's doing okay because he's smart and he's a veteran and he tries his best. Yeah. But obviously, in a perfect world, he's not playing 23 minutes, 22 minutes a night, even with Ferraro, right? So,
yeah. So we've covered 2021 deadline, 2022 deadline. 2023 is going to be a little bit different than 2024's deadline. 2023, we had the big Timo Meier trade, which I think the anniversary for has already passed.
Yeah, it just passed.
And this year, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but I don't think that level of trade is going to go down.
I don't think the Sharks are getting a first round pick or Shakir Mukhamudulin backs.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get Quinton Musty and Mukhamudulin and all sorts of fun things to ogle our brain over. But let's go into our main topic. Let's start with a report that came out today, actually, in good timing from Elliot Freeman on the 32 Thoughts podcast,
his trade deadline preview.
Yep, on their trade deadline preview, or one of them. I'm sure they're going to have 20 of them. But one of the problems, so Friedman said, one of the problems that San Jose has is there's not a lot there that people are chasing in terms of players. There's some interest in Anthony Duclair, Granlund, Ferraro. Teams have looked at Kaapo Kähkönen. Mentioned there would have been interest in Matt Benning, but he's out for the season with a hip injury. So it kind of casts and the final quote is, they're definitely going to try to move their UFAs if they can. The challenge there has been between whatever prices might be asked or whatever is available. Teams just aren't clamoring to get what's there. That's one of the big quotes that's from that. Slim pickings. So Shang, your initial thoughts to that, and then we'll move into your article that you wrote today as well.
Yeah, in my article, I talk about trade values for each of these players, and it's not really that far from anything that Friedman said. So I'm actually annoyed that Friedman's podcast came out hours before. Because my article, I turned in my article last night, and I've had these quotes. It's my fault. I've had these quotes, these conversations for in my pocket for a few days already. So I should have come out with a couple of days before. But anyway, though, yeah, it's not surprising at all. I think that there's going to be a little bit of a panic from Sharks fans about what he said, but it's the reality of it. Look, team has 15 wins. How do you get the 15 wins? It's because your players. Your players suck. There's really no other way around that, to be honest, right? Now, you could have some good players in this suckitude, and the Sharks do have some good players, but you have the record you have for this reason, because by and large, your players aren't performing. And anyway, so it makes perfect sense that the Sharks do not have any first choice guys. Kind of the top of the market, on the display case of the trade deadline market, right? Like they had with Timo Meier last year, right? Timo Meier was sort of the crown jewel among forwards, right? Last year, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't have anybody like that, of course. And so there's not going to be a ton of interest in their guys right now at first, because right now what are teams looking to acquire right now? They're trying to trade for Chris Tanev. They're trying to trade for Jake Guentzel. They're trying to trade for Pavel Buchnevich, right? Those are your display case guys, right?
Yeah.
Once the display case is sold out, or they close the display case because they're not trading those teams with these guys, aren't trading those star players, then there's going to be interest in your Duclairs. There might be interest in your Rudas. And that's natural. I think that's any trade deadline. So I think the Sharks will still make a good number of deals. It's really about no different than I think what we've told you over the last month or so, that, look, you're not going to get anything for Hoffman, LeBanc. You're kind of fooling yourself. Barabanov, conspicuously not mentioned by Friedman. If you get something for Barabanov, it won't be a lot. And yeah, there is interest in Duclair. There is interest in Ferraro. There's interest in Granlund, but there's limiting factors for each of those guys. For Duclair, it's because his game is too, and I'll get to it, but his game is too one-dimensional. And it's a good dimension. It's a great dimension, but it's one-dimensional. And so he's not seen as Buchnevich or anyone like that, right? A well-rounded player like that. Yeah. Ferraro's limitations, we did a whole episode about Ferraro, right? The good and the bad. And I think that it's coming kind of, we're seeing it in the marketplace now. And so if you just look at the minutes and you think Ferraro is that player league-wide, that he is a 1-2 defenseman league-wide, you've been living in fantasy. And so, and we, and
even
I think
in
we told
your
you
wildest fantasy as a Ferraro defender, even in your wildest
and
fantasy,
I'm a huge Ferraro defender, but
he's probably not a first liner.
I told you just sort of what I've been hearing from people, and it's reflected in the article I put out. It's reflected by what Friedman just said, that some people do like Ferraro a lot. There is a chance that you can get that high return, but it's not like it's a league-wide thing, like a Meier where everyone's like, oh man, this is a really good player, or a Hurdle when Hurdle was kind of available a couple of years ago, right? So there isn't that consensus with Ferraro. Granlund, limiting factor is his contract and also his size. People don't love his size. Let's talk about individual players, but
We'll go one by one, because you mentioned our first one. We're going to go by AAV. Basically what their average annual value is currently for the Sharks and players that are somewhere around the trade block or pending UFAs. Mikael Granlund, so $5 million AAV for this year and then 1 year extra is our first name. We talked about this before. It's hard to move that at the trade deadline with the extra year and the $5 million. I think one scout said it. It was an interesting one. As Scout once says, I just don't love having a 5'10" center in a 7-game series. Like, just straight up,
it's
height
the reality
is a factor.
Of what how teams think. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
I think the consensus from everyone I talked to with Granlund is, if we're talking about a value, right? So it's all in the article. It's at NBC Sharks. They're also going to put it on San Jose Hockey Now. But the general idea is that with that contract, we're talking like maybe a third round pick, which might be disappointing for a guy who is point per game for you, at least since late November. Granlund has been point per game. He's been really good for the Sharks. But you have to also take in consideration that he's doing it for a really bad team He sure. gets all the ice time, all that stuff, right? Which he isn't going to get on a better team, right? And also, too, there are limitations to his game. As much as I personally like him, as much as David Quinn likes him, as much as even the scouts that said bad things about him, right? They still love his competitiveness. They love his two-way game. But he is just he's not ideal for a third-line center in the playoffs. And on top of that, he's making $5 million next year, which just that's a turnoff. So he's movable, but not for as much as I think some fans were hoping for. So my prediction, at least, is that he will not move. I think that he's too valuable to the Sharks in terms of the leadership aspect too, which is underrated, yep. but he's super valuable to the Sharks in that kind of way. And also, too, the other part of it, too, is that if he performs next year when his contract is expiring, he's going to be worth more. And yes. because most teams don't want to take on the extra year unless it's like a special player. And Granlund is a really good player, but he's not like a
depth guy that is worth more than his contract. Like if he's like a $1 million guy,
like super cheap. Yes, yes, yeah. yeah.
Guys, teams love like those kind of guys.
Like a bargain contract, right? Yeah. Granlund, even at his best, is not a bargain contract.
Exactly.
And so again, he's not the ideal 2C, 3C for a playoff team, but he does have a lot of attributes that are positive that a team won't mind him as maybe their 2C or 3C if they're strong in other areas, I suppose, right? Like, for example, Colorado, I'm sure, would take Granlund as their 2C over Ryan Johansson any day of the week right now, right? Sure. But maybe that's the next year kind of thing. My prediction is that he doesn't move.
I think we should do for does move or don't move. We'll do a thumbs up if we think he's moving, a thumbs down if we think he's not. So we'll do it like the same time kind of thing.
Okay, try sure.
it? All right, sure. So 1, 2, 3, going down. Yeah, I also don't think he's moving. I think what you said where, and you might have said this offline too, where the Sharks can probably get better value for him next year if they retain they probably don't want to retain for both years.
Years. I don't think. And general teams don't want to.
So teams are probably going to be more.
Retaining spots taken, yeah.
If he's able to keep up his play for next year. And I think even, didn't Quinn say something like, he's going to take a lot to get Granlund out of here?
Yeah, if you want to pay up, right? And so,
yeah, and I don't think teams are going to pay up. So I don't think
they're going to. I don't think so. And also, to my understanding, as far as I know, and I'm going to check this stuff, it moves like week to week, day to day. But as far as I've checked, I don't believe they're actively shopping him either, because I think they know that, look, if a team really wants him, they're going to call and be like, hey, we're going to give you a first round pick for Mikael Granlund. We'll give you a second round pick like the Penguins did for Mikael Granlund. But if a team really wants him, they'll make the call. But otherwise, if that's what you're kind of getting, like a third, a fourth, whatever, it's not worth it. I think he's better on your team. Better take the chance that you can get a bit more for him next year.
And the lingering injury issues with Couture might make them more likely to want to keep a center on the
Fair
roster
point, yeah.
too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next player, Kevin LeBanc.
Oh, we don't even need to. We don't need to even pretend.
Kevin's not moving.
Sorry, no, Kevin.
He's not. And he's at $4.725 million AAV, and that's honestly the beginning and the end of why Kevin LeBanc, I cannot see him moving at the trade deadline. It just teams, by their nature, trying to compete for a Stanley Cup are trying to squeeze every dollar out of the trade deadline. The only scenario, and you mentioned this offline too, is somebody like Vegas, where they didn't get anybody that they wanted on during trade deadline week, and they have
tons of LTIR space,
and they literally say, we'll take Kevin for future considerions for whatever reason.
A seventh round pick and a sixth round pick if we win the Stanley Cup.
They're really impressed by that one power play in the playoffs 5 years ago, and they were like, you know what, that guy knocked us out that one time.
Let's just bring him in for shits and giggles. So we can do it again. Yeah, the guy that knocked us out, we can
do it again.
Right around.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing. I don't see any other team trying to even. I do think a team will take him in the summer, and we've said this before.
I think
he'll get a minimum contract and on a good team to try and rehab some value. Mm-hmm. But no, and your scouts also said the same thing. He's a decent reclamation project in the summer for like $1 million, outperform his contract, give you good offense. But I don't think he's worth anything right now, is what a second scout said. So.
No, yeah, I don't think so. Would add too that the Sharks have, again, emphasized this, is they have one retention slot. They're probably going to use it on a player that is expiring this year.
Sure.
And like we mentioned, it'll probably be somebody that they can get a bit more for if they take on more money, like a Duclair, who we'll get to, or a Kakinen. They won't waste it, I think, on a LeBanc, because if you retain on LeBanc, you turn that money to 2.35. What draft pick does that get you considering his production this year? Maybe that gets you a 6th round pick. You know, what's the point of that? So,
yeah. Next one, also, we're probably going to do the same thing. Mike Hoffman, 4.5 million.
I'm not going to win on this one. So,
yeah, Mike Hoffman, 4.5 million AAV, also a pending UFA to be. He's got 20 points this year in 58 games, which is about, it's a little under his recent production, which has also been pretty poor. But, yeah, this, your scout number three says, I'd be surprised if he moved. And I'm not a Mike Hoffman fan at all from your scout number one. Mm-hmm. If I'm in a foxhole, like in a playoff series, do I trust this guy to really compete? That's fair.
I mean, Mike is a shooter, and if he's not shooting, he's not scoring. He hasn't shown in his career that he has other dimensions to his game. And that's what we've seen with the Sharks this year, unfortunately. And I think it was a reasonable gamble to take that, a guy that could shoot like that, that, hey, he's going to have some opportunity with the Sharks. Maybe he can start scoring and have some value to a team. But that didn't happen. Okay. And so anyway, though, yeah, I also, obviously, with Kevin LeBanc, the contract figure, the AAV is a huge limiting factor.
Yeah. A guy that kind of bounced around for a while was James Neal. A few years back, he was a similar-ish player. I think Hoffman's a little less engaged, maybe even than James Neal. But both shooters, both kind of like later in their career, bounced around teams. But I think Neal had a lighter contract that he was.
Neal had more of a power game. He's like covered him with the Golden Knights also too. The Golden Knights, he had kind of a bounce back year, which helped him get that one more contract, I think, with the Flames. Hoffman hasn't had that year. I think the Sharks were hoping, I'm sure he was hoping, that maybe this year would be that sort of his bounce back year, so he can get himself one more good contract in the NHL, and just didn't happen.
Yeah. So I also, yeah, we both agree. Not going to move. Probably going to be gone at the off season. Mm-hmm.
So we'll do this one together. This one, there could be some suspense on this one.
Mario Ferraro, 3.25 million AAV this year, and then 2 more years left at that cap hit. All right, we're going to do this. Does Mario Ferraro get traded at the deadline? 3, 2, 1. No. We both said no. It's a down vote. You go first. Why not?
It's not any different than the episode that we did, that there is a lot of debate around Ferraro. Some people do like him. One scout told me he traded a 1st round pick for him. Unfortunately, he's not the GM of his team. So. we did get that from Team 33, the episode we did with Mike Santos a couple weeks ago. Once again, Team 33 is comprised of 20 plus former NHL scouts or front office people. And so their kind of poll opinion is that they like Ferraro. So there are people that do like Ferraro, but it's not unanimous. And so I think for the Sharks, that if teams aren't paying up big for him, then again, what's the point? Because like Granlund, Ferraro brings a lot of intangibles. He's great on off the ice. He can, even if he's not a great player in the minutes he plays in, he can at least shoulder those minutes, and it doesn't it doesn't traumatize him year after year. You can come back and play 20 plus minutes a night. And so there's a value to that. And I think he's getting better. That's my opinion. That's what I've seen this year. I thought for a second that maybe this kind of uptick in his play this year might get him a little more. Sounds like to me right now that it's not. I spoke with his agent a couple weeks ago, and his agent said that he had a conversation with Mike Greer. Mike Greer told him that he wasn't actively shopping Ferraro. And so I think it kind of falls along the lines with Granlund, except that Ferraro, obviously, and actually this is a plus for Ferraro, that Ferraro is just 25, and so he really can grow with your team too, and he can be part of your next good Sharks team. And so if you're not getting overpayment, then what's the point? I will say that I should add this, that even though I don't think he'll move, I think if the Sharks did want to trade him, the scouts, obviously in this story, it was kind of mixed, that someone said, I trade a first for him. Other people were more like, I think he's more worth a third. I see him as a bottom pairing defenseman. I think I'm in the middle, and I've said this consistently, that I think that the Sharks were dead set on moving Merrill Farrell, that they could get probably a second round pick for him at some point, if it's not this trade deadline at some point, but this summer or something like that. But I think he has enough value that I still think that unless you're getting that first round pick, that he's worth more just being around on and off the ice, and also being young and being somebody that you can grow with.
Yeah, the defensive depth would be horrific if Mario Ferraro wasn't playing tough minutes for the Sharks right now. And you know, he's also a guy I don't think is going to lose his value necessarily in the next 3 years. He shouldn't.
Unless he gets, one scout mentioned that he gets banged up a lot, and that's true. And so that could be the one thing that happens. But yeah, he shouldn't, though.
Yeah, so unless you're getting a first, I don't think you trade him. And I don't think they'll get first.
Speaking of traumatizing minutes, too, if you're like, hey, welcome to the NHL Shakir Mukhamadulin, you're now the number one defenseman for the San Jose Sharks.
Hello. 22 minutes a night. There you go. And get scored on every other play. Yeah, so you don't want that to happen. You want to bring up those guys slowly. But you're right. It was mixed.
Ideally, yes.
It was a first all the way to a fourth round pick plus a prospect was like the range of your scouts in terms of his value. So that's a big range. All right, last or a couple more. This one, Anthony Duclair, $3 million AAV pending UFA. Does Anthony Duclair get traded? Yes. All right. Yeah, we both say yes. I should have counted down. I think I didn't count down that.
It doesn't matter.
We both did.
We're gonna disagree on any of these guys. So
maybe not. Maybe we get down to the bottom. We'll see. We'll see.
I'm feeling very Joaquin Phoenix Gladiator, but
I 100% agree that Anthony Duclair is going to get traded. He has been playing really well lately too. That kind of helps. Comparatively.
I think fans get a little too worked up over recent performance, like, and also whether or not scouts are at recent games or not. Scouts have seen these guys for literally like. Years. I mean, other organizations have watched these players for literally their entire career. They have pretty set opinions of these guys. And so unless they do something exceptional, they're not going to change the opinion of these guys. You know, what's exceptional? Timo Meier turning himself from being a kind of a disappointment in a couple of years after the Sharks' last playoff performance, right, to 2021-22 when he became a star again, right, the last couple of years. That's a guy that changed people's minds. So something that exceptional, yes, you can change scouts' minds. But if you're not doing something like that, scouts have pretty established opinions of Duclair and what he is. And so it doesn't matter that X-Scout isn't at this Sharks game recently. Or Duclair goes on this binge. It helps. It doesn't hurt, of course. But it's not going to
get a first out of
him. Guy. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Duclair can drop a hat trick the next game. He's not getting a first out of anybody.
Exactly. My prediction. This is my only I have two
very specific predictions. I like this.
Very specific ones. My prediction is that Anthony Duclair, in some roundabout fashion, in some way, is traded. Primarily for Oliver Wahlstrom from New York Islanders. Oliver Wahlstrom was 2018. Yeah, why Ollie? It's a 2018 first round pick by New York. He was drafted as a shooter, still has a great looking shot. And then he's just kind of had he's hitting that time period in a prospect slash young player's career where they start to get 22, 23, 24. And the organization, A, can no longer waive them without losing them. And B, they haven't really fit anywhere into a lineup that the organization starts to wonder, how do I trade this guy for value? And his name has been mentioned in recent. Friedman mentioned him at the beginning of the year this year as a guy that they might try and trade out. And that was in November. And then your article that you put out a couple of days ago mentioned a specific trade from the New York Islanders reporter.
Right, our Islanders writer, Andrew Fantanucci. Sorry, Andrew.
But he mentioned something similar, Wallstrom. Right?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Yeah. I just, and also, it doesn't hurt that Oliver Wallstrom went to BC for a year. There's like a little bit of a Boston connection.
Well, he's
a
not shooter. BU, though, so.
He's not BU. And he's bigger. He's 6'2". He can hit a little bit. I honestly mm-hmm. think that, and this seems to be the kind of player that Greer goes after, right? This like 23 kind of reclamation project.
Right.
Sometimes.
Right. Well, we've seen it with Emberson and Addison. Kautz 2018 draft, Addison yep. 2018 draft, Zadina 2018 draft. Emberson might have been 2019, right? But guys that were approaching sort of waiver status, teams had to make decisions on them, guys like that. Yep. Yeah.
I think it's going down. Like, and New York Islanders are trying to add depth on the wings specifically. So I think this is a match made in heaven, I would say. It means it will not happen.
No, it's a perfectly reasonable thought. I don't know how much the Sharks like Wallstrom, so that's my question there. But sure. Doesn't mean that they don't like him. I think my prediction is more valuation. I think Duclair's value is more around a third. I have heard second, but I think that's a bit rich. I'm not seeing it for sort of a winger that has kind of one mode to his game, which is speed. Mm-hmm. And if he's not doing that, I don't think he's helping you so much. And so that doesn't usually get as much at a trade deadline, even though that one dimension of Duclair's is a excellent dimension. It's not just above average. It's up there. Right. And so, and he can finish too. So he can use that speed. And once he gets those chances with that speed, he can do something about it, which matters a lot. Noel Gregor. Right. And so, so I think I would say a third. Yeah. I'm not seeing a second. I'm not even seeing, no matter what he does from now until Friday. I don't think it gets up to there, but hey, maybe I'll be wrong. So.
You had one scout that said teams need that speed. I think someone will give up a second, and then your the least evaluation was like a fourth. So second to fourth is kind of the pegged value, and that seems about right.
Right. Oh, and I actually did want to add. I want to mention with Ferraro that it is pointed out to me that, and it's true that it does just take one team. Even at the time, other teams were, and this is a quote about Granlund, teams were rolling their eyes about the second round pick that the Penguins gave up for Granlund last year with two more years of contract left. Teams, another deal that was brought up to me that teams around the league wondered about was the Stars giving up a first round pick for Nils Lundqvist a couple of years ago. And I bring those up because it just takes a team. So it just takes, I think Ferraro is a great example of it, where if that first round pick is out there, it just takes one team to offer it, one team to really like a guy. And there are some guys where I don't think teams like him much at all, like a LeBanc or Hoffman this year, that there's no reason to hope for that.
For sure.
But then a guy like a Granlund, like a Ferraro, they're good players. Who also bring intangibles, and so there is a hope of that. So I did want to say that even though the projections may seem low to people, and I think they're accurate to sort of the temperature of the league or whatnot, right? That it just takes one team, and so hopefully proven wrong, and the Sharks can trade Alexander Barabanov for a second round pick or something like that. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, look how much the Lightning gave away for Tanner Jeannot, right? Like, it was like five draft picks, including a first round pick. It just takes one team to like pry somebody away. And
Right. And, you know, definitely contract, right, has a big part of it with it, right? Which I think was a big Jeannot thing. So it does ultimately, you know, these are just kind of educated guesses, right? These aren't like set in stone, right? So what my sources are saying, the Elliot Friedman story, it just takes one team. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. So our next player moving down the list of the AAVs is our one Kaapo Kähkönen, who we mentioned earlier in the show. He's got $2.75 million AAVs, a pending UFA after this year. You need your hand, Shang, is...
Oh, yes. Okay.
All right. So in 3, 2, 1, is Kaapo Kakkonen being traded? 3,
oh, I'm sorry.
2, 1. Oh, you already did it. We were both going up anyway. I'm like a one up and one kind of sideways in between, I'm going up.
That's fair.
This might have been the most unanimous of your scouts. They all just said he'll get a third.
Yeah.
Maybe a second or a third.
My prediction, I think we talked about this like maybe a month ago. I predicted a third too, and this was before I talked with anybody. And it's just, you look at past comps or whatever, and that's sort of what you get. And so yeah, I think that's what he gets. I think there's an argument that if you don't get that, then males will just keep him, and he forms a nice tandem with Mackenzie Blackwood. If you can get him back for a reasonable contract, which you should be able to. And so I think that is a possibility. And so I'm a little with you. Like, I think Duclair is like a full standing.
Yeah.
But
thumbs up.
Yeah. Kaapo's a little like this. Yeah.
I think because the goalie market is so volatile, I do think they'll get more than he's worth. And I think they'll trade him because of that. And I think they'll take a goalie back too. I think that would be the way that it'll work, because the Sharks will need some sort of goaltending depth if they do trade him.
Right.
Blackwood injured. And so they'll take somebody back too, if they're going to trade him. But I'm going to go with yes. Okay. Luke Cunnan. This is an interesting one because he's not a UFA. He's 2.75 million AAV. He's a pending RFA. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting one. I wasn't really thinking that he was going to get traded, but let's do a 3-2-1 on him. Does Luke Cunnan get traded at the deadline? 3-2-1. You're going up. We disagreed. All right.
Oh, finally. Yeah. a little debate.
All right. Go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like a month or two ago that someone had told me that I think I threw it into one of my game notes, that someone had told me that, yeah, Luke has a lot of these sort of attributes that teams like in the playoffs, and plays the right way. He's physical. If you give him a chance, he can score.
Sure.
He has a little bit of finish. And he's a little expensive. He probably belongs in your fourth line or something like that, right? But if you can kind of make the space for him, this is a guy the Sharks probably have to retain on, maybe. But a playoff team would welcome a guy like that. And so taking that in, and then Elliot Freeman reported that the Oilers might be interested. That I could see a fit. And I'm not entirely sure what the Sharks' plans for him are. He's not a UFA, he's going to be an RFA, but his qualifying offer is going to be $3 million, which is a little bit rich, obviously, for his production. I think if he was making half that, you'd be thrilled. If he was making even two-thirds of that, you'd be a little more okay with that. So I wonder if the Sharks might want to bring him back, but on a lower contract, right? So I suppose that's possible. Or a playoff team might take a chance on him as a good depth guy, a good addition to their bottom six. And so I'm not sure if he'll go, but if he does go, I'll say that he goes for a fourth, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the people I talked to, they suggested a fourth or a fifth.
Sharks traded a third for him, right?
They traded a third for him. I don't think they'll get that back. I could be wrong because I think Luke is the kind of player that kind of can get a sneaky kind of sort of, like I said, he has a lot of different attributes that teams like for the playoffs, I think. And so he's a guy that can get maybe more interest than all fans see the Duclairs. They see the kind of the flashy players, right? And they think that that's what teams want for the playoffs. And a lot of times it's not. And so I think that Luke is kind of an under radar candidate to have maybe even a little more interest than the Oilers. And maybe that can gin up his value up to what the Sharks traded for him. But I doubt it though. But I think
I just don't see a team with the space to really acquire him. And then the qualifying offer, they'd almost have to be like treating him as a pending UFA even. Cause like,
right.
Are you going to give Cunnan $3 million after, unless he somehow obviously does amazing.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. So I just don't know how much value there is there for him to be traded, but wouldn't be the most surprising thing. Teams love guys that are physical, and he's a physical dude. Maybe this is one of those situations where an LTIR team can fit him in. Something like that. This is an interesting one.
I was just say that I do really think though that he's a guy that on a playoff team's fourth line can probably look quite good and kind of be like, oh, Sharks gave up a pretty good player there.
Yeah. This is one that's would be interesting if he did get traded. This is Jan Ruta, $2.75 million AAV this year, and one more year acquired in the Erik Karlsson deal. Let's do a 3-2-1. Does Jan Ruta get traded this trade deadline? 3-2-1. We're going yes. More debate.
Tell us why.
Yeah, I actually agreed with your scouts that there's like these kind of guys that he's a veteran. He's been in, he's won a cup before. He's some guy that he's not that expensive. 2.75 is a little bit rich for what he brings, but he seems like to fit the mold of what a team might want at the deadline. A lot of times is this kind of steadying third pairing defenseman. And big, somebody said no,
right-handed.
Yeah, big. Right, yeah. Nobody looks good in San Jose right now is what scout number two said. And I agree with that. That Eden Root has looked okay. So, I think teams, like you said, with Duclair, like they've watched Ruta for however long. They know what he brings and what he's going to bring for a team. So all it takes is one team to really fall in love with that this year. And you get the benefit of having another year, whether or not that's good or bad for a team that
he's won some teams Stanley it's good. Cups before.
Yeah. He's won a Stanley Cup. So I think he gets traded. I just think it's going to be one of those sneaky ones where we're not realizing it and he gets traded.
What do you think he goes for?
I think like a third round pick.
So that's where my point of contention is. I agree with all those things that you say, that the reasons why teams might be interested in Ruta and that he could look much better on a contender than he does with the Sharks. But I wonder, and I think the extra year of his contract is not a great thing. It's not a huge overpayment, but it's a little higher or it's a little more expensive than I think teams would like for a bottom pairing guy, a guy that strictly, again, that teams see as a bottom pairing guy, albeit a pretty good one. So I think offers end up being like a fourth or something like that. And the Sharks might be like, we'll just keep him, because next year, again, with the expiring contract, and if he still is a pretty good player, then maybe you can get that third the next year.
Yeah, that's true. If he maintained his play for next year, it's possible you could come up around from your fourth round offers. Yeah. But we'll see. Kind of a shot in the dark. This one's a ditch one, because like, we might disagree on this one too. Alexander Barabanov, $2.5 million AAV. He is in his last year of his contract. He's going to be a UFA. Actually,
that's a fun one.
The NBC Sports article you have has I think an incorrect on his contract, because it says 1 year left after.
Oh,
this
yeah, yeah, you're right. That might be my mistake. So sorry, I'll double check it, or we'll get.
He is a pending UFA to be. Mm-hmm. If you asked this last year, is Barabanov going to be traded? I think the answer might have been yes, or thought maybe yes. But now, is Barabanov going to be traded at this deadline? 3-2-1. We did disagree. Okay.
You did disagree, yeah.
I think they just take whatever they get. I think they get like a fifth or a sixth, like your the value suggests that he's worth. And I think a team just pays it and hopes that he somehow plays in a third line role and can score some points. I think that a desperate team.
You sold me.
I did. That was it.
Yes.
Wow. I should be. Mike Greer.
I don't know if he's in the
call
plans.
Call me up, man.
And
yeah,
I don't know if he's in the plans, and so he might be a take what he can get situation. So yeah.
Yeah, I think they just say, all right, we've kind of lost all value here, but let's just get something for him, and he's going to walk in UFA probably.
I didn't want to go back to again, and I'm going into this like told you so mold, but like even last year, he wasn't getting a lot for the Sharks. Again, the type of player, not a lot to his game besides the offensive part. It just doesn't get a lot of the deadline usually. And so, so I don't think I don't think it's something that I would kill the GM for. That, oh, we let Barabanov's value fall. I don't think it was an incredible sky high value to begin with. And so, yeah, I was thinking that he would be nice. As you can sign him for cheapies. He's had a bad year and he can come back and help. The Sharks will need help at the wing still for sure. And he's proven to be, as the article by Nikita Sokolov, the article he wrote about Barabanov and him being a sort of a big brother for the Russian players. I think that's a nice, that nice thing. And Sharks obviously have a lot of Russian players in the system. And so having a guy like that around isn't a bad thing either. But I don't know that's enough to keep him though. And so, yeah, that's why I changed my mind. I was thinking at first, oh, maybe bring him back and bring him back for cheap. And he's good in the room, especially with your Russian prospects. But
yeah. So, and if you really want to sign him in the offseason anyway, right? Like he's going to be UFA if you really want.
Yeah, that is true.
And also my trade prediction has to happen of what, a fifth, a sixth, and Jason Megna. So maybe just a sixth of Jason Megna or fifth. Remove one of the picks. But I don't know. One of these will have to happen. All right, this is our last player on the list. And then I'm going to throw one wild card after this one, and then we'll be all set.
Okay.
Nico Sturm, $2 million AAV this year and one more year. Does Nico Sturm get traded at the deadline? 3-2-1 No. You also go with no.
Yeah, I agree. My thinking is that offers won't be high. People like him, but offers won't be quite high enough. And again, he's another guy that you can save the next year, and he'll be worth more on a as an expiring contract, I think. And so maybe you're hoping you can get up to a third, but I don't know if you will get that. I think the offers you get are more in the fourth at best range. So again, you just kind of say like, well, fourth is decent, but let's just wait a year on it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's not worth it. And again, Sharks might need centers, and he's good in the room, and he's shown a lot of leadership like on the ice. And I feel like you're not going to get the offers because he probably makes $1 million more than like an ideal Stanley Cup winner.
Maybe half a million at this point. Maybe not quite $1 million, but half a million more maybe. Yeah.
But so they're not going to like pay a premium for him, and he's not young or anything. So I just, he's worth something to a playoff team, but he's not worth enough for the Sharks to want to get rid of him.
Yeah.
I think. Last, this is a wild card. You know, you're unprepared for it entirely. Does Ryan Carpenter get traded at the deadline? Ryan Carpenter is on a $775 contract, expires at the end of this year. Was kind of I wouldn't say throwaway signing, but like a depth signing for the Sharks. That
he was meant for the Barracuda.
Exactly. And he's turned into kind of like an everyday player for the Sharks. Has 10 points in 43 games this year. Mm-hmm. Does Ryan Carpenter get traded at the deadline? 3-2-1 I'm optimistic. I don't know. Yeah. I think they get like a seventh round pick, and somebody just really wants like a 13th forward.
Maybe.
I like
Ryan, but I wonder if he's playing 4C for a better team. I doubt it. And so I think that's kind of, he's done a good job considering the circumstance, but I think obviously he's benefited from just the very poor team around him. And so, yeah, I'm not
traded in March 21st, 2022. So two trade deadlines ago for a fifth round pick. Calgary acquired him as like a depth.
Right. But then this offseason, he ended up with the Sharks as destined for the Barracuda. And so I think his value has declined, right, from those days.
So, yeah, that year he had 11 points in 59 games for Chicago. Then he played 8 games, had 1 point for Calgary. So honestly, like his production's about similar to what it's always been in his career.
It's not a production thing though, right? I think it's about like just the kind of the subtle, the speed, the things that you start to lose at your age, kind of that impact on the forecheck, things like that, right? That maybe he could have done better when he was 27 or when the Golden Knights picked him off of waivers from the Sharks, right, years ago. And So I think those are the things that are probably going to, and I could be wrong. I actually haven't asked really about Carpenter, but I will say that no one has brought him up to me too. Kind of like, oh yeah, you know what? That Ryan Carpenter's actually had a sneaky good season. Teams might be interested. So
I think he's had an okay season.
I think he's had okay season. Standard. I'm just saying though that not enough that
of course
that a team really sees him, like, even as like we have injuries, do we want him as our 4C? I don't know. Mm-hmm. In the playoffs. I don't know. So
our last UFA is Justin Bailey. If you want to talk about Justin Bailey. I don't think so too.
I can go ahead. I think obviously the tools are there with him in terms of his size and skating, but I think his game in terms of just his defensive awareness, things like that are still lacking. Yep. And so that's what, again, in the playoff
team's going to want.
You want to be able to trust the guys that if you need to play a guy in a pinch, you want to be able to trust the guy, right? And yep. I don't know if Bailey is up to that point where a team will trust him. So,
yeah, I agree. I just wanted to mention it because he was our last NHL UFA. We do have Lindblom and Simic, but I don't think either one of those are going to be traded either. Yeah. But that's it. So honestly, that's it. Not that great
we'll
of a haul. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah.
Like, what is the most that we're going to get? Kakinen's going to get it maybe a third. Duclair, I don't know. Maybe a prospect like Bollstrom or maybe
again,
third, fourth.
I'm not sure what you're expecting, right? I think that people got really excited about Friedman's Ferraro report for a couple months ago. Still possible. Like I said, it just takes one team, but it's not, again, it's not a unanimous thing. This again is not a Timo Meier. Everybody can see how good the player is or the value that the player has. And so Sharks don't have anybody like that. And so, but I think that players will move. Like I said, I think that after teams get their first choice guys, the Sharks will have some interesting players after that.
Yeah. The filler, fill out your lineup player if you've got space for him kind of thing. They're going to use their trade or their retention slot on somebody. So I wonder if that is Duclair just to get the most they can.
Yeah. I think it's going to be one of the more, they're the more desirable trade deadline assets or pending UFAs. So Duclair, Kakinen. So yeah, that's where I'm kind of seeing that.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun week. I'm super excited, and I'm excited for our post trade deadline show. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep.
I got nothing else to say. It's not going to be, maybe if you're a draft nerd and you love getting fourth, fifth round picks, it's going to be fun. And I'm a draft nerd, so it's going to be fun for me, but that's about it. Anything else to say, Shang?
No, I think that's pretty much it. We'll see how it goes. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully there are first round picks or second round picks coming to the Sharks. But we'll see.
Yeah, they acquire a superstar they acquire Sidney Crosby in the weirdest. That's the newest rumor going around Twitter is that the Penguins are. Not that they're going to trade Crosby, but is it time to start thinking about trading Crosby? Anyway.
I mean, it makes sense in a way. So, yeah. I don't think it's going to happen, but.
No. All right, guys. Hope you guys have a good week. We'll talk with you soon. Bye.